Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Sarah F. Hathaway. She is author of Day After Disaster. She grew up in the country where she developed a profound interest in the natural world around her. After graduating from the California State University of Sacramento, she returned to her passion. She has extensively researched and practiced survival techniques in the natural environment and utilized forgotten life-sustaining methods of the generations past. She currently lives with her husband and two sons in California, where she is at work on the sequel to her first novel. For more information, visit her website, which is www.authorsarahfhathaway.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Sarah to the show. Good day, Sarah. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Robert. It's a complete honor.
I'm really pleased. Your book is a fictional work, and it does deal with relevant issues, but I just, you know, that's one of my favorite genres, and, you know, there's a lot of information and a lot of things learned from a work of fiction, correct?
Correct. I really wrote it that way. You know, I had the story in my head, but also I wanted to kind of awaken people to the fragility of our society, and what better way is there to learn information than through hearing stories? You know, we've been doing it for millions of years, and so that was kind of my way of getting, you know, entertaining while I'm educating at the same time, so it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's start with your interest, you know, as I mentioned in the introduction, you had this, you know, that you kind of grew up in the country and had this natural interest. So, you know, sharing with the listeners just a little bit about, you know, why this is kind of a passion. It seems like it's a passion of yours.
It is definitely a passion of mine. I grew up in Michigan, and I grew up out, you know, on 5+ acres out there, and I was bow hunting and fishing the Great Lakes with my dad, and I learned how to work in the gardens and can with my mom and grandma, and so I just learned a lot of skills that aren't very common anymore, but it was really commonplace to me, and I just loved being out in nature, and I loved, you know, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe books. I always played that I was in Narnia, and we were in this you know, imaginary nature land. Yeah. So, you know, my passion really started there. And as I grew up, I just continued to bow hunt, horseback ride, and just really, you know, walk in the woods, go hiking, things like that. And then in 2008, I developed a stomach issue, and they gave me all kinds of Western medicine for this problem. And I went from being somebody who was working 10-hour days and training Taekwondo for 5 more hours after that to being in the fetal position on the sofa. And I just wasn't buying that my problem was lack of medication. So
wow.
I found a guy who does Eastern and Western medicine. And he, you know, really introduced me to some of the herbal remedies that are out there. And it really just perked my interest even more in what is available when we walk outside our door. So that's really, you know, where my steam comes from nowadays.
Yeah, wow. You know, gosh, there's much, I think, that, you know, we can learn, you know, from the natural ways, you know, and natural medicines. And, you know, and to me, it drives me crazy when I see advertisements on TV for, I mean, right now, I mean, it's like you can't go one commercial segment without of drug being
Absolutely.
advertised with the side effects being possibly death. You know, it's like, well,
Yeah.
hell, what good has
Probably
that
some of the
done?
good ones, some of the side effects I've seen. That might be the best thing that could happen to you.
I
So.
know, I know. Gosh, it's crazy. Well, let's talk a little bit about Day After Death. First of all, you know, kind of what's it about, and you know, kind of what was your inspiration and your motivation for putting that together?
So Day After Disaster is a story of a woman who goes down to work in Sacramento, and the whole earth changes while she's down there, basically. A series of earthquakes hits the entire globe. And so everybody's thinking that it's a localized issue, and they have no idea that everybody has been affected, basically. So it's I wrote the book on a very microcosm because I wanted people to think, what would they do? So I wrote the disaster from her point of view. You're not seeing the big macro picture of what's happening everywhere. You're just seeing her story. And so it makes it very real and palpable that, you know, you feel with her, her emotions for to get back to her family, and she would cross the fires of hell to do that. So it's her survival story to find out, you know, did my family survive and can I actually make it home?
Wow. Yeah. You know, so many disaster films and stories really do take that macro approach, you know, of look, you know, kind of looking at the world and but it's, you know, if and when something like that should happen, it's really at that micro level that you really kind of need to you know, kind of put action, you know, and you know, move into action when that kind of thing happens. Now, your woman character, she has to obviously use survival skills. So, were those skills that you have learned and honed over the years?
Yeah, so I drew a lot on my own inspiration. I actually, when I wrote my book, I was doing a lot of business writing at the time, and I was driving down to Sacramento to go to school and come home. And so I just needed an outlet, really, for my creative writing. So I started it a long time ago, and I just kept working on it and working on it. And so my story is a lot reflective of my life because I never intended to actually publish the novel. So Erica, she's the female main character in the story, and she reflects a lot of the same skills that I have. Of course, I can make it fictional, so she can be, you know, really awesome and stuff like that. But I also didn't want to make her over the top. You know, I wanted to make her very relatable so that everybody reading it could go, you know, she's nothing really special. But she had this, you know, she was physically fit before the disaster happened. She had a basic understanding of herbal remedies and first aid techniques. She had a basic understanding of self-defense and martial arts and things like that. And that's what I really encourage everybody to, you know, it's good for yourself and for your soul anyway, but should that time come to us, you know, you're not going to want to be getting in shape at that point. It's a little bit late. So that's where her skills kind of come from.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I've learned through talking to many, many authors is that it's so important to write about things that you know, and, you know, that's just one of those areas where, and fiction provides a, some, I guess you could say, safe, you know, environment for you to kind of tell your story, but also gives you freedom to, like you say, maybe add a little bit more super, you know, above average capabilities that you may not feel,
right.
But also,
right.
You know, a way to kind of, you know, also talk about fears and challenges as well.
Yes, for sure. There are some, so I wrote it about the local area that I actually live in. And so there are some areas that are exactly true. They're there. They exist. But then there's also some things that I did fictionalize, like there's a dam that was supposed to go in by our house that never did because they were actually building it directly on a fault line. Little did they know. So they never actually put that dam in. But in my book, the dam does exist, and it blows out, and that's what ends up flooding Sacramento. Not that, you know, Sacramento wouldn't see some serious devastation already from the rivers that are dammed up above it, but it could be much more severe if that dam was in place as well. So there is that blend of fictional and reality in the book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what makes it. And of course, the setting of Sacramento and earthquakes, I mean, it's, you're right there, San Andreas. This is, you know, I mean, look at the movie San Andreas out there, you know, so it's,
right.
You know, there's, you know, you have that little touch of reality, but those are the things I think that, you know, someone reading your book, you know, it will cause them to, you know, take note, to stop and take note and to really question whether or not they're prepared, you know, and it seems like preparedness is a really important aspect to the book.
Yes. And that's what I, you know, one of the main messages that I wanted people to take away from it is realizing that we are living in this artificially built world where we're relying less and less and less upon nature, and we know less and less and less about nature. So it's my message to kind of, hey, let's reconnect a little bit just for your own safety should anything happen. No, there's lots of things right outside of your door that you can eat. Let's kind of focus in on our local farmers that are providing us food right outside of our cities rather than it being shipped so far. Let's focus in on our community and our loved ones instead of, you know, so much social media. Let's get to know who our neighbors are, because, you know, if something were to happen, those are the people you'd be leaning upon, not somebody on Facebook. So, you know, that's kind of the takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is so important. I've lived in a lot of different places, and there were, when I was in California, I was usually in the Long Beach area, that kind of thing. I only maybe knew one or two of my neighbors, but, you know, I'm in South Carolina now, and I know a whole bunch more. And it is interesting because, you know, that in times of disaster, I mean, you look at it now, whenever there's a disaster, a natural disaster, I mean, it's the community that pulls together, you know, and it makes it so much easier if you've already established yourself as part of that community.
Correct. Yeah. And that's my message is, you know, let's get together back as communities so that, you know, we're in a big wildfire area. So we're working on like a community wildfire plan right now, because it can come up on you so fast. You have so little time to prepare. So we have to know what to do, how to respond as a community to something like that.
Yeah, very much. Now, your website, I mentioned, author SarahFHathaway.com. On that, you talk about the Changing Earth series. Can you talk a little bit about your website? Because it looks like that you provide some of those resources that people could use.
Yes, I do. So on my website, it's kind of my... that's what I'm into. I like researching herbs that can be used for things. I like researching, you know, how to prepare yourself to be ready to go if you want to. And then I share that with the community. So I have a blog on there that talks about it. And my next book is at the editor right now. And it's the Changing Earth series, because it follows how humans are adapting to our planet rather than how we're adapting the planet to fit to us. So it's, you know, we live on this planet that has changed before in the past. It's going to change again in the future. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So as human beings, in order for our own survival, we're going to have to know how to respond to those changes. So I try to bring some of that information, just some of the old techniques that, you know, our grandparents knew. They took it for granted, and we have no idea. And the generations behind us are losing it even faster because of all of the, you know, technology that they're so dependent upon. So I bring a lot of that information there. I also started my own podcast. It's called the Changing Earth Podcast. And on my podcast, I read a chapter from my book, and then I have a survival professional on to talk about one of the topics that were presented in the book. So that's another great way to blend the fiction and the fact together, and we can hear the story and then learn an important item from that story afterwards. So that's been a really cool project to work on.
That is great. That's great. You know, and now one of the things, I mean, can you maybe share with us one of those, you know, techniques, one of the things that we've lost that we would, you know, really, that would we would need, you know, should that happen? Like just an example so people can. Mm-hmm.
This is an article I have not done yet that I will be doing, because I thought it was so simple. And there's so much information really out there, But I was posed the other the question the other day, do you know how to make a fire? And, or how do you make a fire? And I'm like, well, I use my Bic lighter, you know? And she's like, no, seriously, like, how would you make a fire? And I just didn't realize that, you know, I take what I know, my skills are there. So I just assume, I guess, that everybody else would understand that skill. So I am going to do a blog that's about, you know, how to start a fire without using a Bic lighter, which, you know, is very convenient. But there's many ways as far as having, you can use a D battery, you can hook two pieces of wire to it with a piece of steel wool in between those two wires, and it'll create a spark. You can use the magnifying glass way. Of course, there's the flint and magnesium that would be really well, really easy to use. Most people think of rubbing the two sticks together or using a bow drill, which are really good techniques for starting a fire, but they take practice, they take skill, and you have to know how to do that before it happens. So there's other easier alternatives out there that you can go to instead of having to go all the way back to the bow drill. So that's something that, you know, would be in my book or would be on my blog. And then also I like to blog about herbs that I'm using to, you know, help things out. Like yarrow is very good for you. Stinging nettle I've been researching rather invasively because it's really good for the liver, kidneys. It's a really good plant, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, it's a weed, get rid of it. Dandelion is kind of the same way. It's an absolutely a superfood. It has tons of vitamin C. It is going to power pack your body. It is a little bitter, so you have to mix it with like some other greens to, you know, really make it palpable, edible. The flowers are a lot sweeter. You can make those into fritters and things like that, but they are just so vitamin packed, and they're right outside our door. Most of us are fighting them in our lawn, you know, and then we could be using them. So I find that kind of humorous. So.
That is, you know, yeah. I mean, and those are things that you really don't think about, but when it, you know, push comes to shove and you need some nourishment, you know, you're just going to have to look around you.
Right. And it's right there, and it's so great. And the stinging nettle actually has protein in it as well, which is really odd for a plant to have a protein value, you know, other than a legume or something like that. So, that one's been just top of my brain lately. I think that'll be one of my next blog posts as well. So,
yeah. So with the changing of the earth changes, do you, in your opinion, you know, do you think that we have maybe hit that point of no return? I mean, because, you know, right now it's just so, I mean, it's very topical. Obviously, we've got, you know, politicians, you know, on both sides, and I don't know how
right.
there's two sides, but you know, but I won't go there. But I mean, the whole thing is that, you know, it seems that really when you sit back and look at it, I mean, the changes are happening. I mean, right there in California, you have, you know, dozens of fires going on right now, like, and you know,
right.
putting together that thing. So, do you think that we've maybe kind of hit that balance, that tipping point, maybe where, you know, we may not be able to recover?
So, this is a question I ask myself all the time, and I don't think it's that we're not going to be able to recover. I think that humans are extremely adaptable animals. We've been bottlenecked before, and we've made it out okay. So I think there's going to be answers. There's going to be survivors. What I'd like to believe is that we're just in one of the Earth's cycles. So obviously human activity is going to intensify those cycles because we dug up a lot of carbon out of the ground and stuck it in the air. So, you know, I believe that it's a natural occurring cycle anyway. And then humans have definitely helped push it along. So that's what I would like to believe. But as I mentioned before, our planet has gone through some drastic changes in the past. You know, Egypt used to be a jungle where people were living, and now it's just sand. So, you know, California could be sand in 80 years. So,
yeah.
You know, there are changes that are happening, but you have to wonder, too, how much media representation of what goes on the planet. We're very connected now on a level that we've never been before. So you just don't know if it's media presenting it to us more or if it really is happening more. So it's definitely a question that I think everybody struggles with.
Yeah, it is. And I understand what you're saying as far as just the awareness, because it's, we have that instant, we can immediately see if an iceberg calves, within hours or within minutes of it happening, versus,
right.
Back in the day when we have been able to. You mentioned earlier the idea of humans adapting to the Earth. Do you think that we're, as humans, that we are going to, if we have increased heat, do you think there's going to be changes in our DNA, let's say, or just the essence of who we are, that's going to change to adapt to whatever Earth changes are happening?
Well, we definitely have to, and then the DNA is going to be off of, it's going to be survival of the fittest. So, if your body type was more set up to, accept those changes, then obviously your genes are going to be ones that continue on. So that would happen through, the natural evolution. If it was a type of heat circumstance where we had to go underground more, people with night vision, better night vision, those genes would be selected over people that don't see as well as at nighttime and things like that. That would be worst case scenario for me. I'm pretty claustrophobic, so I don't want to go into the ground.
Me too.
But, we have bottlenecked our population in the past and we've come through it. So I want to believe that humans are adaptable enough that we could make it through it. It's just a matter of we have to be in connection with our planet. We have to know what we can eat and we have to know how to survive off of the land, not off of what we've created as human beings. Because if we lose those skills to the point where nobody remembers them anymore, then we're in a whole different ball game of trying to relearn everything and survive. And the worst time to be learning anything is when you're trying to use it for survival.
Yeah, that's very true. And, when it comes to raising food, I think many millennials, are just, go to the grocery store and pick it up,
right.
And wouldn't know anything about planting a seed or, anything like that. To me, it's just one of the those basic survival, kinds of
right.
activities that is
and
really
even
kind
not
of
even
less.
And not even just planting the seed, but once that seed grows, how do you get new seeds for next year?
Yeah. And see,
so
now if I would be a vegetarian. I'm more of a hunter-gatherer than a hunt. I mean, more of a gatherer than a hunter. But
and that's why, at that point in society, that's why your community would be so important, because there'd be people with all these different skill sets. So to be this lone wolf survivor is not really an ideal situation, because you don't have somebody growing your garden for you when you leave base. And you don't have somebody who could go out and hunt that meat for you while you're just back there gardening. Or somebody that would take care of your kids while you go out to hunt. Things like that. Every person in the society is going to be pivotal. And the lone wolf survival aspect is just not very realistic. I mean, even if you're injured or you're sick, you don't have somebody to take care of you. And you're going to get injured and you're going to be sick. That's just a fact of life. So that's why, I really preach a lot of community, because you're going to have people in your group that are medically trained, and you're going to have people in your group that know how to teach skills to other people that are teachers, that can educate the youth, that can take care of the youth while people are out hunting, protecting, whatever they need to do. While people are preserving all those foods that you pull out of your garden, there's got to be other people doing other things, sowing and taking care of all those basic necessities that, are so easy for us now. We just, you get a hole in your shirt, well, you just go down and buy a new shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't have
yeah.
somebody in the group who knows how to sew or even you know, how to replace the material, eventually the materials will deteriorate and you're going to have to make new. How do you do that? So those are some of the things that I really encourage people to take a look at.
Yeah, very much. Now, in your book, where with Erica, how is she, you know, involved in the community? How was she integrated into a community? And maybe talk a little bit about how she dealt with, you know, pulling in others in that survival aspect.
So without trying, you know, without trying to give away too much of the book, when she emerges from where she was stuck/saved by everything going on, she ends up in really bad shape. And so she's taken in by this couple, Henry and Carol, and they're kind of living the homesteader's lifestyle. You know, they have their garden and they have their supplies and things like that. And so I kind of introduced the, you know, more of the homesteading lifestyle at that point. And they take her in and nurse her back to health. And it talks a lot about, you know, how she feels just kind of like a resource drain to them at that point, because, you know, their family ends up showing up and she doesn't really have a place. She knows she's just going to leave. So she's trying to just, let's get going here. So Erica kind of winds up as, you know, more of a hero in the story, but not because she chose to be, but because she was, you know, trying to do the right thing when the circumstance presented itself. So, you know, there's a threatening group and nobody wants anything to do with them, because why would you put yourself in danger if you didn't have to? Well, it's ended up forced upon her that she has to go up against this group with her group. And, you know, she's not a leader of it. I have another character that leads it. It's just, she knows how to work a bow and she knows how to work a gun and, you know, she's agile. So that's where she comes into play on those kind of things. So she ends up being more of a soldier type, because she's so into martial arts and defense and teaching that to other people.
Okay.
And
that's
as far as I can go, really, without giving away.
That's all right. No, that's all right. We want people to buy the book and read it, because, I mean,
yeah.
You know, we definitely want that to happen. So, and that's great. I mean, I was curious, you know, because we were talking about the
skill
important.
Set.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, gosh, okay, we're about halfway through the show, Sarah, so I want to take just a quick couple-minute break here, and I do invite people that if you would like to call in and ask Sarah any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359, or for those of you listening, if you have any questions you would like for me to pose to Sarah, feel free to type them in. And then when we come back, Sarah, I think let's go ahead and move on to talking about, you know, the importance of relationships, you know, family relationships and the values that the people have maybe pre-disaster and post-disaster, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And as I just mentioned in that little spot, I appreciate you supporting our guests. Supporting today's guest, Sarah F. Hathaway. You can go online and purchase her book, Day After Disaster. You can also visit her website, which is authorsarahfhathaway.com. And she also has a survival store there, as well as blogs. And mentioned the Changing Earth podcast. So there's a lot of great information and resources available there. So definitely check it out. Again, her website is www.authorsarahfhathaway.com. And again, there is a direct link to her website in the show page description. Sarah?
Yes, sir.
Alrighty. Well, let's talk about relationships and values, because one of the things that as people think about pre-disaster and post-disaster, so many things change, and in particular relationships and what is important. So, would you mind kind of talking a little bit about what are some of the things that you addressed in your book and that you feel that are really important for people to maybe take a preemptive approach to?
Oh, you're cutting in a little bit.
I'm sorry. Okay. Now I was going to say, I'm sorry. If regarding relationships and values, and the pre and post disaster of what's important, with values and relationships prior pre disaster and post disaster. So in your book, what are some of the values and the relationship perspective of relationships that you kind of feel are important for the readers and just for people in general to consider?
So in my book, Erica is married, and that's kind of odd for a survival book. Like I say, usually it's the lone wolf type approach, whether that be from a male or a female perspective. So, when I'm married, I've been married since I was 19 years old. I got married pretty young. And I married my absolute best friend in the whole world. And we're here 17 years later. And it's just like we were married yesterday. So that's one of the things I really wanted to bring out in my book, was the relationship between husband and wife. And, Erica's whole point, she's just completely lost without her family. And it just has a very special meaning. It will definitely tug at your heartstrings, especially if you have that certain someone in your life that you would be crossing the fires of hell to get home to if you had to. So that's her whole drive, is to find out, did they make it? And I really wanted to bring that to light because, as I mentioned before, we're very reliant upon the social media tools. And we forget about how important it is to have those relationships, not only with our neighbors, but with our community and with the people that we love. A lot of times, we go to work and we get home and we're tired, and we don't want to give those people in our lives the respect that they deserve. We figure, we can be more of a jerk off or something like that when we get home, because they're going to love us anyway. Well, a lot of times those relationships are the most precious. Those are the ones you have to realize that, without that other person, where would you be and who would you be? Would you want to be that person? So it's just a lot of self-reflecting as far as, how much do you value those relationships? And if you really value them, then aren't they worth respecting? Aren't they worth saving? Aren't they worth, trying to take a moment and see it from another person's point of view? Even if you're tired and you're worn out, well, guess what? So are they most of the time. So I really wanted people to just reflect upon the fact that those relationships are really special, and our relationships with our children are irreplaceable. And if you wanted to, try and survive in a world that's post-destruction, those are the people that would be there for you no matter what. And so even if we're not in a survival situation, shouldn't you be there for them no matter what? As long as it's a healthy working relationship, because I understand that everything's not ideal. We get into circumstances where things aren't ideal, but the ones that are really working, sometimes we throw them away just because it was a hard day and we think life might be better without them. And so that's, something I wanted people to reconsider. A lot of times we take our children for granted. We take our loved ones for granted. And we just need to hold those relationships real close.
Yeah, I agree. And, that's, in times of need, disaster, times of turmoil, those are the ones that we, kind of fall back to and really find that are really important. With the, that kind of talks about relationships. What about values? Now, not in particular with relationships, obviously, that. But I mean, just
right.
Different types of values. What are a couple of them address in your book that might be game changers or might shift as a result of something like that happening?
There's questions in this book that I dealt with that I struggle with a lot. I was raised Roman Catholic, and I still, I'm still a firm believer. My faith is strong. But I didn't want to jam that down people's throats. I do have the presentation of God in the book just because that's where I draw from personally. As far as moral dilemmas, we would be faced with them at every turn in a situation like that. So I tried to address some of those questions very emotionally. I tried to bring out, how some females would be more vulnerable to the advances of, some men, that they could, if you're not sound in your body and your mind, you could be a very vulnerable situation. So I presented that as well as the question of when would you pull the trigger on somebody? When could you justify that taking another person's life was acceptable? For me, that's a really hard question. I'm a turn the other cheek kind of person. I'm a forgive and forget and move on, because hate in your heart is going to destroy you too. So, that was one of the moral issues that I dealt with in this book that was really, really tough to bridge that gap of when would that be acceptable? Everybody's hungry. Everybody's just trying to eat. So, when do you say, no, you can't have that because I need it, to the point where you would pull a trigger on somebody else because you need it that bad?
Boy, yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know what I would. I mean, that would be really tough with me too. But I'm very much like you, as far as turn the other cheek. Very. I'm just the type that would find it very difficult to take someone else's life. But then again, I don't know. I've never been in a situation where it's been them or me.
Right.
And it does make you wonder.
It does. It was a very challenging question for me. So that's a moral dilemma that doesn't really go away ever, I don't think. And I've talked to some veterans, and I've basically been told that it's really a moral dilemma that never really goes away.
Okay. Boy, yeah, that is really... That's definitely a tough one to deal with. What about, are there any other ones that maybe were, that you found? We have that God, what would God, where's God in all of this?
Right. And when do you turn? Like, I try not to turn to God for my personal prayers. So I figure, if it's, I can handle that on my own. I only try to pray for other people, and their safety or whatnot. So, for my character to call upon, just give me the strength, to get home. I say, I presented it, but I didn't want to flush people over with it, because I know that, that's what our country is founded upon, is religious freedom. And so I didn't want to hammer people over the head with it. But I also wanted them to understand that your faith is a very strong position to go to when you're in that kind of dilemma, when you are feeling pushed to the walls, that, you know, your faith is a very strong place to draw strength from.
Yeah, very much. Now, you know, you talk this whole thing of survival, and you talk about your podcast, you know, bringing on people who, you know, work in that area, you know, as far as kind of giving survival techniques. What are some of the, what are some things that you would maybe tell the listeners right now that they could do to prepare themselves, you know, some survival tips, I guess, that they could use to help better prepare themselves?
Okay, so kind of my general rundown is that over on my website, if you subscribe to my newsletter, I have a go bag essentials guide, and this will help you get a backpack together. So if you had to leave your house within 5 minutes, at least you can feel confident walking out the door with more than a garbage bag. So you see all the victims from Katrina and from, you know, our disasters that we've had, and they're usually walking down the street with a garbage bag. So this is a toolkit to get you ready so you're not that vulnerable when you walk out your door. Now, granted, it's going to be a horrible situation. You're going to lose a lot of stuff you love, but at least you know you can walk out and survive. The other thing that has to be in that go bag that a lot of people haven't heard about is a tool. It's called a life straw. And this is a straw. You can buy it at most camping places for just $20. And it will filter water even from a puddle to make it drinkable for you. And it does up to 250,000 gallons per straw. So, and they only cost $20. So I recommend you have one for every single family member in your household because, I mean, water is key when you're out there. So that's what it's about. The other thing I would say is get to know your local farmers market. Those are the people growing food right outside of your city. Those are people you're going to want to have a relationship with before things happen. Maybe take some skills from them on how you could start doing it at your own home.
Okay. Oh, that's a really good set of advice right there. I mean, because most towns do have a farmer's market, you know, and or something like that, you know, that kind of thing. Or at least, like you say, maybe even get to know some of the neighbors who have gardens and,
right.
You know, and get on the first name, you know, support each other. That seems to be an important aspect as well.
Right. They always need help. Canning is tedious. So if you get over there and help out, and it's a lot of fun, and, you know, you can get some goodies from it and form some great relationships. So that's really a powerful thing.
Well, good.
You know,
go ahead.
One of the things I found interesting in my research is when the big earthquake happened in San Francisco back in the day, half of the cattle population was killed as well as half of the people population. So that tells you that those cows were right outside of the city to feed the people in the city. The people in the city knew exactly where their meat came from because the cow was right out there. So I found that really interesting that now we've moved that so far away from our city centers that if disaster did strike, I mean, now how do we get it from point A to point B? Even if you're growing it and you have the food sitting right there, how do you get it to the people that need it? So that's why I'm a big proponent of trying to get the food supply back outside of the city.
Yeah. That's, you know, that whole idea of local, I mean, you know, just supporting local, you know, produce, your local markets and farmers and that kind of thing. And then now, of course, you know, you're right when it comes time to feeding others. I mean, you know, the people in the urban areas are, I mean, those are the ones that are going to be hit the fastest because those are things
Absolutely.
That are, I mean, you know, yeah, boy.
Most vulnerable.
Yeah, the most vulnerable. Thank you. That was what I was looking for. Okay. Well, now let's talk this a little bit more about your website and your podcast. A couple of the topics that you've covered in them right now. You talked about you want to do the one on fire so people can go ahead and go in and sign up at your website and get ready for that one. But what are maybe one or two of the other ones that you've done and the types of people that you've had on to
the survival technique? On the podcast, I have everybody lined up so far. So if they go over to my website, they can see who's going to be appearing on my show. I've got a really great lineup of professionals. One of them, James Hart. He's out of Texas. He's going to be on there a lot. And James is a very learned guy. He's been through Vietnam, and he is has some survival skills that are just, I could pick his brain forever. So in my first episode of the Changing Earth podcast, I had the survival mom on. Her name's Lisa Bedford. And she's a great lady who's written some amazing work on, you know, just how to be ready, how to feel confident that your family is prepared. And she does a blog as well with some really great content over there. So I was excited to have her on. And on that show, we talked about earthquake survival because that was the first chapter and how it was applicable. On the second show, we went into survival shelters and talking about survival shelters of the past versus survival shelters of the present, what some of those differences are, some of the things you want to look for if you were going to put in a doomsday bunker, you know, some kind of a area where you could be safe. So things that you want to think about when you're building those, if you're going to do it yourself versus hiring a contractor and stuff like that. And that was a gentleman by the name of Raymond Dean White. And he wrote a series of fictional books called the Dying Time series. So, and his books are really good as well. And then in the third episode, we talked about resourcefulness and small watercraft safety. So that just tells you that Erica made it out and she's now on the water. Yeah. And I had the nautical pepper come and do that. His name is Captain William E. Simpson. And he was a fantastic gentleman to talk to. He has a wealth of open sea survival skills and island skills. And again, he is just I could pick his brain forever as well. So I've been honored that some of the people that are so renowned in the survival community have really taken notice. And I've got some great material coming up all throughout the show. So.
Well, that's great. I mean, those are all of those areas, each of those. I mean, they individually, I mean, they sound like they're each would be important, you know, when it comes time to survival. I mean, it's, you know, it seems that, you know, I mean, I think there is a we get complacent, you know,
yeah.
People get complacent when you know things are, you know, I mean, they're told they're going to explode. You know, it's kind of like, you know,
right.
In the hurricane season, you know, where, you know, people get, you know, told to evacuate, nothing happens, and then they don't. And sure enough, that's the one time when something does happen. So it seems like, you know, those are the kinds of things that people, I mean, you want to instill fear, but you do want to instill, I guess, preparedness and confidence.
Right. You know, we all have insurance policies. Why do we have insurance policies? Just in case somebody wrecks my car, just in case my house burns down, then I'm going to be monetarily compensated for that. So I kind of look at preparedness skills as the same way. If you have a car, do you carry a spare tire in the trunk? Of course you do. Why do you do that? Because you might get a flat tire, you know, so you're not going to just leave your car because you got a flat tire. You're going to take the spare out and put the spare on. So that's kind of how I look at preparedness. It's just learning the skills. And I'm not a person who's going to advise everybody to go and store stuff. Because stuff is expensive and stuff can go bye-bye just as fast as you got it. So I'm a big proponent of people going out there and learning skills, learning tools that they have in their toolbox, in their head, and so they know they can walk out and survive on their own without all the stuff.
Oh, that, you know, that's really important. You know, that's really good because in today's society, we are so focused on the material aspect, you know, and, you know, and then, you know, when that time comes, I mean, you can only carry so many supplies with you, you know, and supplies can last only so long, you know, then the skills, you know, and talents and that kind of thing would step in.
Right. And it's fun. You know, it's fun to just get out there in the nature and learn how to do some of the stuff. And, you know, it's a good bonding experience with your family to get the whole family participating, you know, and going out and you learn what all the plants are. So you're not just looking at greenery anymore. You're looking at, you know, which what plant each one is. And it brings a whole new element to just walking and being part of nature.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I love nature myself. So, I mean, I've been taking time to learn about herbs, you know, various things that are healthy, you know, that are right out there that I can incorporate into my life too. Okay,
right.
Well, gosh, go ahead.
I've got a great wild forager coming on. His name is Abe, and I've also got a woman who is fantastic at herbals, and her name is Kat, and she also has a podcast. So those are shows you're not going to want to miss them because they are really talented individuals.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Okay, well, we're kind of winding down here, Sarah. Now, is there any area maybe that I haven't covered, you know, maybe talk a little bit more, you know, any more about your book, any more about, you know, what you offer on your website, just kind of in these few moments?
Yeah, the Go Bag Essentials Guide is a great checklist. It's the checklist I use, so that's why I wanted to share it with everybody. And so the website, you know, is always a wealth of information over there. The podcast is going to be a lot of fun, so I encourage people to do that. My book's available on Amazon. It's only $2.50 if you like reading ebooks, which I don't. I always have to have paper books, but the paper book is really reasonable as well. And then the sequel is coming. It's coming back from the editor right about now, so just a couple months, and we're going to be doing that as well. So it's going to be fun. So all they have to do is stop on my website.
Okay. And a little bit more about the sequel.
So the sequel follows the same family. So that's kind of an insider perk right there. And it's what happens. I wanted to start my whole series at the biggest disaster and then continue it from there. And so the changes are still happening on the planet, and it's talking about what did they do next and how did the government respond to what happened. So I bring out a lot of my ideas on big government and things like that in the next one, even though I want to keep the focus on the planet and not so much on governmental forces and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Well, you know, this has really been very interesting, Sarah. I personally love that book, you know, of fiction and you know, and one of the things that I've found is that even when you go through and read something like that, there are all kinds of nuggets, you know, little bits of information that you can take and you can apply it to your life. And also it, you know, it sounds like Erica through a whole lot of mental challenges, you know, especially when it comes to surviving and family. I mean, it's like, it's a whole, you know, basket full of emotions that people would go through even if there weren't a disaster.
Right. And that's it too. I mean, aren't we all in survival mode right now?
Yes. Yeah. Born to
survive.
That's
kind of how I look at life. I'm not like waiting for the day. I'm pretty much already there. I just live it. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, this has really been a lot of fun, Sarah, and I appreciate it. You spending the time to talk with us. And
well, I really appreciate you having me on, Robert. It's been an honor, and I can't believe the hour just flew by like that. So
it has. Well, you had a lot to say. I appreciate that. So that's really great. Okay, again, thank you very much. And we are, by the way, we are on Twitter. We're following you on Twitter, so I do want to let people know. Use that social platform. Be sure to join Sarah and myself there. Any other platforms that people can join you?
I'm a big lover of Pinterest, so it's kind of like the endless learning tool. So that's, I'm over there as well, and on Facebook, of course. But Pinterest is really my favorite spot to be. So
great. Well, I'm on there too, so I'll join you. I hadn't realized that, but I'll go ahead and join you there too. So
okay,
I look forward to that. Okay, great. All right, thanks a lot again, Sarah. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Sarah F. Hathaway. She's author of Day After Disaster. Again, you can find out more about Sarah, her blog, and definitely go to her website, sign up for all of the information that she has there, and follow her podcast and learn from the survivor, the lists that she her show on her podcast. So again, all of that is available at her website, which is www.authorsarahfhathaway.com. And again, there is a direct link to her website there in the show page description. And as she mentioned, she's on Facebook as well. So if you use any of those social media platforms, be sure to join her there. Everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.